So I'm really pleased to welcome Hugh, who's come to share his experience, strength, and hope with us tonight. So I'll hand the meeting over to you.
Name is Hugh. I'm alcoholic, and lovely to be here amongst you all. And thank you for asking me, Jeanette. And lovely to see that people are here. Good attendance. I'm very, very, very grateful to be sober. It's the most important thing in my life. It's the biggest thing I've ever done. It's the greatest achievement of my life, and it'll always be that. There's nothing, because it simply means if I hadn't got sober, I would have been dead a long time ago. And you can't ask for any more than that. I hope, and I don't know whether anybody is struggling or new in this room tonight. I wish you very, very well if you are, and I hope everything works out for you. I don't like giving advice to people because it's too hard to get it right. Right. All I would say was just don't pick up the first drink. If you don't do that, just get to meetings. Everything will work out slowly but surely. No matter what's wrong at the moment, it won't improve if you take a drink. That's for certain. I found that out the hard way. I'll tell you a bit about my past, really. I come from Dublin. I'm 73 years of age. Both my parents were alcoholic and quite heavy drinkers, and were only on weekends when I was growing up, because that was the only time they had money. And they used to have they'd go to the pub on the weekend, and they'd bring back a load of people with them, and there'd be a bit of a party in the house, And we used to all get up out of bed and recite poems and sing songs for them, and they'd give you a couple of pennies and things. And I remember noticing that as from about the age of five onwards, when my parents had drink taken, and when these sessions were going on in the house, the atmosphere was wonderful. They were very, very friendly and loving, hugs and kisses and everything else. And then during the week, when there was no money, you were walking on eggshells the whole time, and you're liable to get beaten any minute, And I used to think even then, how great drink was and made people nice, I remember that because all the neighbors and everything, you'd be in there and they'd be laughing and joking, falling around, and it was all funny, to a kid. And I just remember that stayed with me for a good while. And after a while, of course, all young people who started drinking ourselves, it was just a bunch of kids, just coming up to our teens and things. We used to get cider, mostly cider. What we did, we had no money, so we used to go out and rob scrap metal. That was the easiest way of getting your hands on a few bob, And we go around all the derelict houses and stuff, and any factories that we could get into. And the church was always good for copper, And we get all the scrap, take it up to the scrap yard, get a few quid, and then go and buy some cider and a bottle of BP port. We used to mix them together, drink it, and then we'd be sick. We'd be fighting, we'd be laughing, we'd be crying, be all over the place. Didn't know what was going on, but loved doing it, and I always wanted to do it again as soon as possible, try to get some more money, the thing else. And that's the way it went for a good while, and then I was 50 and I was able to get served in the pub, a pub, which was 3 miles from the house. And they weren't very strict in there, and I used to stand behind big blokes ordering the pint, and so they didn't pay much attention to me, and I was drinking away there, and I was loving it, and then that went on for a little while, and as they got to know me in there, then I got more confident and sat at the bar, and I used to sit at that bar, and get a few jars into me, and after about 4 or 5 pints, I'd be looking in the mirror behind a big huge mirror behind the bar, I'd be looking in there, and I used to get better looking as the night went on, and I thought this alcohol is great stuff, and it made me sort of, because I was quite sort of shy in a lot of ways, and didn't fit in so well, but in circles, like, you know. But once I had the drink taken, you know, I felt like I was that good looking and that any woman would want to be with me, you know what I mean? And I could fight anybody and win, you know, because I knew what I was doing. And of course, like, you know, that used to backfire at times, obviously, like, you know what I mean? But at that time, I believed it, you know, and I took the drink, like, in that sense, it's like the nearest I've ever had to having a higher power, you know. It was a great thing, you know, having drink, having this feeling about myself, feeling so perfect, feeling so good, you know what I mean? Having never felt that way without drink, you know, and then being able to fit in into more different circles and stuff like that, you know, and get numbers, like, and it was really great, you know. But I was getting into a lot of fights, like, with, you know, and mostly just ordinary fights, you know what I mean? But I kept getting into them on anyway. But things weren't going well at the house, you know, and between me and the father, like, it was getting very close, you know what I mean, to one killing the other, you know. So I got him to let me join the Irish Army, and that was in 1969. I was 17. I was 17 years old and 4 months. And if I could have waited another 8 months, I knew that when you're 18, you could legally leave home, you know, and get on with your own life. But 8 months at that age seemed an awful lot, you know. And so I thought, like, if I join the army, I can get out of the house tomorrow. And that's exactly what I did, you know. And I fitted into the army quite easily because it was easier to me than home life, you know what I mean? I wasn't missing anything. And the drink was very cheap, you know. We were getting £6.13 a night a week as recruits. And but you could get a pint for a shilling, you know. So it meant that you could have a good gargle every night and on the weekends, you know. And you didn't really need to buy much clothes because you had the old uniforms and all that, you know, you were wearing them most of the time. And you were drinking in army messes. So it didn't really matter about anything like that, you know. But I got into a lot of fights in the army too, like, and I always got confused or something after a few drinks, and I'd start fighting with people. I don't know why I used to start half the time, you know what I mean? But I just did get into a lot of them, and I got locked up a few times in the army. And when I was 19, I was stationed up. I was a radio operator. I was stationed up on the border, and I was stationed in Dundalk, and I was on patrols all the time. And I was in Dundalk one night, and I got into a bad fight, like, and I got a right hand, you know. And I was in intensive care in Louth County Hospital. And I was in the intensive care for a few days, 4 or 5 days, and then I was into an ordinary ward. As soon as I was put in the ordinary ward, the army came and picked me up, took me out, and took me to their hospital back in Dublin. And I was in the hospital, they assessed me themselves, and they decided, like, that I was alcoholic and needed to go to an AA. So they made me go to a meeting when I was 19 years of age. And that was in St. Patrick's Hospital in Dublin. And I went along anyway, like, because the alternative was to get locked up, you know, and I was looking at probably about 3 months. So I thought, yeah, I'll go along, you know. So they took me down the Land Rover and went in, and it was just they were all blokes there. There was no women there, you know. They're all up. To me, like, as a 19-year-old, they just like a bunch of old men, you know. And they're looking at their own, and I thought, this is a lot of shite, you know. I had no intentions of giving up drinking. I didn't want to be there, you know. That's where they'd put me. So I waited, and I was in there, and then I seen the Land Rover pulling away from outside, you know. I thought, that'll do me. And I left. I walked out, you know. A couple of people called after me, but I didn't pay any attention. And got away and went for a few drinks, like, as you do, you know, and then went back, and it was just chaos like that. And then when the 3 years come, they were absolutely delighted to see the back of me, you know. And out I went, and while I was in the army, I'd come over to London twice on holidays, and both times I drank my money too quick, you know. and had to do a couple of days on the building sites. And you used to get a fiver a day in your hand on the buildings in them days, which was a lot of money. And I thought this was fantastic because you're fit and young, you know, in the army like that. They give you a fiver in the evening. Then after a day's work, you go to stay to the pub, have a few pints, get a pie and chips on the way home or something like that. Like, and then get up again in the morning and do another day's work, you know. And I decided then, like, that because I knew I wouldn't be welcome back home. I knew that there was no work around in Dublin. So I'd made up my mind, even before I left the army, that I was coming back to London, you know. And I did. I came back over here in July 72. I came here, and I've been here ever since. And that's where I got this Cockney accent today. And I just settled into London, you know, and I've always loved it, you know what I mean? It's I still love it today. You know, I've loved it because, first of all, like, when I came here, nobody knew me, you know what I mean? I could be anonymous anywhere I went. And if I got into trouble in one area, I could always go to another area, you know what I mean? If things didn't work out too well in one pub, I could go to another one. And I got into the pub trade as well then, you know, between working in buildings and the roof. Then I got into the pub trade. I worked barman, then the head barman, then bar cellarman, and eventually got to manage, you know. But I had two pubs and I lost both of them. Like, I had one in Soho, in Dean Street, the bathhouse, and I had a fight in there, like, in the, you know, usual fights, like a drink, you know, and I got into a fight, but there was two customers who used to come in, and they used to come in at 2:30, but we used to close at 3 o'clock. They used to come in at 2:30. They were half bitter drinkers. I hated half bitter drinkers. I hated half pint drinkers. Good stuff. And these two used to drink these half pints, and they'd make them half pints last up to 1:50. Then they'd call another half pint each, you know, and they'd be the last ones out of the pub. And they were loud, talking at the bar all the time. Public schoolboys, you know. And I, Jesus, hate them. Anyway, one day I was in there and I'd been drinking with a Johnny Walker rep. He wanted me to put up a lot of stuff for him in the bar, like to promote the whiskey. And so we got stuck into having a good drink together. And I seen these two coming in. I was pretty well oiled, you know. And so there was a New York police baton behind the bar, an ornament that had been left there by some years before. And so I got a hold of it and I moved the time on the clock up to just gone 3 o'clock. And I said to barmaid the time, I pointed up to her. And then these two come up with our second half. And I said, now we're closed, you know. And they went bananas, like having a right go, you know what I mean? So I lashed out with the stick, intending to hit the bar between the two of them, you know, and give them a fright. But I caught one of them on the side of the head and split them open, you know. Then the whole pub started fighting. I don't know why how that came about, but there was a fighting everywhere. And I called the police, you know. And by the time the police got there, like, the whiskey had set in with me, you know. And I was the only one they arrested, you know. And that cost me the pub, you know. And I'd only had it 6 months. But that was the way it was, you know. All things like that, you know. Another one, the other one, I, like, I caused a fire, you know. And, you know, it's a... I was been drinking that Navy Neaters rum, you know, and I drank the best part of a bottle of that. And it's over in the flat, and I wanted the downstairs, the toilets rather on the first floor where we were. I was with Mrs. then. The toilets on the first floor were blocked up, so I had to go downstairs to have a loo and use the loo. And I couldn't be bothered to go down the stairs, so I just opened the French windows and pissed out over the lawn, you know. And I closed the French windows again. Then one of the little panes of glass broke and I closed it. And the breeze blew the curtains onto the electric fire. And the place went up in seconds, you know. And I got out of there. Luckily, the missus got me out, really. I was trying to put it out, but I hadn't a clue what I was doing. And she got me out. I was naked, you know. I was out outside, this was up in Golders Green, on the out on the pavement there, and the fire brigade and the police and everything there. And they took me to a Royal Free in Hampstead, and smoking inhalation, you know. And I was in a bed in there, and then they gave me a pink top jacket, you know, and yellow trousers. That was to make me a bit decent, like, you know. And then I get up out of the bed and I walk out of the hospital, you know, and despite like all the arguments and everything else, I just left. And I walked back from there to go to the back to the pub and around to the, because the flat was burned down, there was nothing wrong with the pub itself, you know. The pub was separate. The flat was around the corner from the pub. And went back to the pub and then got stuck into a drink again. And of course the pub was, you know, it came down that week and they got rid of me, you know what I mean, paid me off. And that was it, like, you know, they're the only two pubs I had. I ran other pubs for tenants, you know. But I never got my license back. You know? I got into a lot of fights over the drink load. That was the way it was in them days. It was always getting the fights. You know, it wasn't so bad, but it was on the pints. I'd just get into silly fights, and you just get arrested for drunk and disorderly, or abusive language, or urinating in the public place. You know, all the little ones. And but then getting stuck into the whiskey, I used to get into bigger fights. You know, and get some bad situations. And when the police had come to nick me then, I wouldn't go with them, you know what I mean? I wouldn't have it. So I'd take them on. And of course, like, it's well, no, you never win. You never win against the police. You know what I mean? I fought the law and the law won. They won every fucking time, like, you know, just the pat of me, you know? But that's just the way it was, you know? So I ended up doing a few sentences, you know, and spent 6 months here, 9 months there, 3 months there, you know what I mean? All that, like, it all mounted up. It's come around about 3 years, I suppose. All told, you know, from all the sentences. But I never went to AA in prison or anything like that. Like, I was very defiant, you know, and thinking like there's a lot of us to deal with them being against the Irish, you know. That's why the police were picking on me and all the rest. And it just went on like that anyway, and then just drank and on. And then I was married with two kids, and I went to the doctors. I asked her for more painkillers. So said, my back is killing me. And she said to me, do you think you might have a drink problem? You know, that was her answer to that. And I said, yes, I might do. And then she recommended that I go into Springfield Hospital, you know. And I thought, like, this would be a great solution in the sense, like, you know, you'd be lying in some hospital, you'd have a 20-year-old blondes wiping the sweat off your forehead, you know, and you'd be really comfortable in there, and they look after me, you know. But it was totally different when I went in there, like, it was totally different than that. And it was a bit rough place, really, you know. And there was people walking around with visible mental illnesses, like, you know, visible to you. And I said to my missus, you know, you're not going to believe this, but I've been putting a lot of mad people in here. She said, well, yeah, no, I can understand that. I said, these people aren't just, like, with drink problems. I said, they're fucking mentally ill, you know? And of course, I couldn't see anything wrong with me in that sense, you know? Anyway, it became a bit of a thing. Like, I was in there a few times, and they got me so sobered up, you know, and they put you on different medication. Then when you sort of back to so-called normal, they slung you out again, you know. And then you just got back on the piss again. That's the way it was, you know. But the last time I was in there for 5 months, you know, and I was fucking really cracked up at that stage, you know, and was having, like, alcoholic fits and I was just going into meltdown, like, without any provocations, you know what I mean? I had no control whatsoever, you know. And I kept getting, like, when I was in there, like, I got into a couple of arguments with staff in there, like, and they had a security, the bouncers in there, if you like, you know, coming in, and they gave me some stuff, like, and knocked me out, you know. And twice when I was in there too, they got the police from me, you know. But they didn't throw me out of the hospital. You know, the police came in and gave me warnings. They were going to take me away the second time. But when the psychiatrist said, no, like, you know, he's just like, he's not well, you know what I mean? All this looking like. But anyway, I stayed there and they tried various different tablets and what have you, you know. I was getting, like, I'd be on the ordinary ward, then I'd be in the lockup ward, you know. Then they'd take me back and put me in the ordinary ward, and I spent on anyway. And in the end, they thought I was getting sort of reasonably well, I suppose. The psychiatrist, now, he said to me, like, well, this was on a Tuesday, I think it was. And he said to me, we're letting you out next Monday, you know. Now, I was married with two kids at this time, you know. And I said to him, I'm not ready to go out. You can't put me out. I've got to stay here. I'm not cured, you know. And he said, there's no more we can do for you. You know, you've got to go. You've got to try and make a life for yourself out there and go to AA or something like that, you know. Anyway, then that afternoon, one of the nurses put a note on my bed and said, AA coming to visit tonight. 8 o'clock in the OT room, you know. Now, I thought they were coming to have a chat with me about me drinking, you know, and to give me some advice. So I thought, well, the least I can do is go over and see them, you know. So I went over anyway, and it was a full-blown meeting, you know. they were all like really nice people, though, not very friendly and everything else, you know. And I remember thinking to myself, if the drinking ever gets too bad, I go to these meetings myself, you know. But I didn't think like that. I was finished with anything like at the time, you know. At the end of the meeting, then they said to me, like, we'll see you again now next Tuesday. And I said, no, don't come next week. Don't come next week. I'm getting out, you know. And they said, we come here every week. We've come here for years, you know. And I that because they showed you where the head was, like, I thought like that. They just come for my benefit, you know. All of them, the whole fucking room full of them. I don't know how many, there was 20 odd people there. All came just to sort me out, you know. So naive. And then, anyway, I got out of the hospital and my wife would be coming up to see me the whole time in that hospital every day, you know, and bring me up the packet and anything else I needed, like, and bring up the kids, you know, and they had to sit out in the lawn and have a bit of a laugh and all the rest, you know. And this was me out of the hospital now. And that night, I said to her, I was going off the pub to where I gave a pool, you know, where I'm not going to drink. And I was thinking like that. And I turned, by the time I got there, I thought, well, if I have a few pints of that Black Label, it's only piss anyway, it was not going to do me any harm, you know. And I get a few black, few of them pints down me. And because it's been a long time since I drank, that would have done the trick, you know. But then I decided, like, again, like, and all this happened in seconds, I decided I might as well have 4 or 5 pints of Holston because it's only 2 pence more than the other shite. And at least it'll have an effect on me and I'll be all right, you know. I won't need anything else after that, you know. Just the logic, you know. And then by the end of the night, I was full of whiskey and I was fucking thrown out of the pub, you know, barred. I went home then into the bed and pissed all over the wife, you know. This was me after 5 months. And that was the end. That was the last nail in the coffin of the marriage anyway, you know. And rightly so, like, she's gone, you know. And after a little while, like, I was just continuing on drinking, you know, and wondering what was going to happen next. And after a little while, like, I thought, like, if I was to give up the drink, she'd probably come back, you know, and they get her back. I just give up the drink and get her back. And then when I get sorted, then I can go back and just drink ordinary and not be getting myself drunk. And anyway, I went up that Springfield again because that's where I knew there was a meeting. I didn't know there was other meetings in London. I didn't imagine about anything. And I went up there and the people all understood. That was the funny part of it. Like, they understood this and they understood what happened. And they weren't shocked in any way when I was telling them any of the stories, you know. And they started looking after me and driving me around to different meetings, you know, and getting, and then physically, like, I got well quite quick, you know, you do, like, when you're not drinking, like, you know, you just, the system gets a chance, you know. It was very, very hard, like, that. I seemed to be getting along anyway, you know what I mean? It was terrible, like, going after the meeting, like, going home and the panic attacks, you know what I mean? The fear, you know, the sweat running down my back and all that. I couldn't sleep in the bed. I was afraid to get in the bed, you know. So I thought once I lay down flat, I didn't know what a panic attack was, but once I lay down flat, I thought there was something happening with my heart. And that I'd jump up again. I thought the only thing I could do is sleep in the armchair, which I did, you know. I was in an awful bad state, you know, and I could hear the kids in the house and they weren't there at all. And I'd be looking under the bed and in the wardrobe and everything, like, I couldn't see anybody, you know. I didn't know what was going on. If I put the telly on, I could hear the kids. So I had to keep that off, you know. So it was most of the time, like most of the nights, I'd be walking the streets and things just to kill time, you know what I mean? Get away from everybody, away from me in the head, like, you know, and then go back. But I kept going to these meetings anyway, like, because people were friendly, like, and, you know, I was borrowing 2 quid here and 3 quid there off different people, like, start to help me out, you know what I mean? And they were quite good people. I mean, Sean was one of the first ones I met, like, and that was in 83, you know. All in all, like, I started to get well despite myself, you know. I kept going and I started getting into service, you know, cleaning out the ashtrays and sweeping the floors and making the tea, you know. Then eventually rose up the ranks to secretary, you know. And I was doing really well for a long time, you know. And then I made up a lot of amends to, which then was my ex-wife, you know. And I was able to take the kids on a lot of holidays, you know, all over the country, all the theme parks all over this country. And then I took them to France and Turkey, and I took them to Dublin a couple of times, and then I took them to America, to Florida, to what do you call them, Disney, for a couple of weeks, and they loved that, you know. Man, but you know, everything went really well. Everything was going well, and I was getting on with my life. Like, I was in and out of a couple of relationships, but there was nothing in them, like, you know, as such. But then I got into another, like, I was 13 years old, and I got into another relationship, and I was obsessed with this woman, you know. And I was cutting down the meetings to be with her, like, you know. And then I started to say to myself, ah, she's coming around. I'll leave the meeting. I'll go on Saturday, you know. Then I'd say, oh no, I'll go Sunday morning. I'll go on Monday, you know. And then I wasn't going to meetings at all, you know. And that relationship, like, lasted about 8 months, I think. And it was a sick relationship. It was just, you know, I was just obsessed with having sex with this woman. I don't know any other way of explaining it. But anyway, we split up in the end. I told her I didn't want to ever see her again. And next day I was raging. I said that, you know, but whoever, that's the way it worked out, you know. And but I didn't come back to AA, you know. And I was just getting on with life, like, you know, as things were, in whatever state I seemed to be in. And then this friend of mine, who just died recently, he was in a very bad way. His wife was leaving him, and he was suicidal, and I believed him, like, because I knew the type of character he was. You know what I mean? He was a very good type of bloke, but he was in this state, like, and he was really, really down, you know, very down. You could see it in his face as soon as you looked at him, you know. So I, of course, had a brainwave. I thought, no, move in with me. I said, move in with me, you'll be all right, you know. I'll sort her out, you know. And of course, he did. He moved in, and it was fine for a while, you know. I was enjoying myself, doing all the coke, and, you know, and everything was going along, started smooth enough. But then, like, he wanted to go down the pub for a couple of pints, and I'd go with him, you know. And These were very laborious things, you know. You're sitting in the pub room all night, like the man mightn't have half of the first pint, and if you're there 3 or 4 hours, I'd be drinking soft drinks, you know. And then one night I was in the West End room, and we were in there for a good while, you know, and he'd only the froth come off his pint. That's all, like, you know what I mean? We was in there. I'd had about 5 or 6 soft drinks up to this stage, you know. And I was enraged, you know. I was in a real bad mood, like, with this setup. And then two women come in and sat facing us, you know. Young women, good-looking women, you know. And I was looking, they were laughing and joking, you know, and everything was going really smoothly there. And they were laughing at us and digging us in, you know. And I just went up and got myself a large whiskey, you know. I didn't see that coming, you know what I mean? If you'd asked me that morning, like, were they ever going to drink again, I'd have laughed in your face, you know, and I never honestly believed I would, you know. But I did, you know, and that was it. Now, it wasn't my mate's fault. No, I mean, he's gone to the grave now. He still feels guilty about this, you know. He still felt guilty about it, rather, all his life. But all the time, like, you know. But it was me that took the drink, you know, and I learned that when I came back to AA. I had to go in the end, like I was on it for 3.5 years, you know. And I wasn't drinking every day, like I was binge drinking, you know. I'd go mad on it for 5 or 6 days, really, really putting an awful lot of drink into me. And then I'd be so sick I wouldn't be able to get out of the house or have a drink. And I'd stay in, and then I'd slowly, slowly come around, you know, get well. Then I'd start looking after myself again, and then bang, I'd be sitting on the bar stool somewhere else, you know. And I used to think to myself, Jesus, I hope it's not as bad as it was the last fucking time. I hope it's not as bad as that, you know. But it was, of course, it was as bad as that, you know, it was always as bad as that. And, but anyway, I went on, and then in the end, like I said, I wanted to kill myself. Like, I just didn't know what to do or where to go anymore, you know. But I didn't want to die, you know. I can't explain it. Like I said, it's just a weird, weird place to be, you know. But I knew that if I came back to AA, I knew that deep down, if I could get myself back to AA, I'd be all right, you know. Now, I'd had 13 years of sobriety before, you know, and if I could get myself back there, I knew exactly how it worked, you know. But getting back there was the hard part, you know. After a few days, like, of not drinking, you know, and sort of getting my act together a bit, like, and eventually, like, being able to have a shower and get myself sorted, I went over to a meeting over in Fulham, you know. And I got over there like an hour before it started, you know. I walked over there too, and I still got there an hour before it started. And I didn't know how to get in, how to go in the door, you know what I mean? How to face the people. And I thought somebody, I was so paranoid, I expected people like to point a finger at me or laugh at me and, you know, say things about me and things like that, you know, and say you're fucking idiot, you know. And in the end, I got the courage to go in. I thought, what there was a walk in. Anybody says that to me, anybody has a go at me, I'll just fucking knock them out and I'll walk out again. You know, and that was the spirit I went into the meeting with, you know, the attitude I went in with. I went in, and of course, everybody was lovely to me in there. Everybody looked after me, you know, and gave me enough to stay there for the meeting, you know, I mean, to stay through it. Like, and they were very kind, you know. And I got through that meeting, and then I felt I could keep going, and I started going to meetings regularly. And I hated AA when I come back. I really, really hated it, you know. It was very hard to fit back in. I was just in a terrible bad mood all the time. You know, I'd see somebody come in to do the chair, you know, and I'd look at them, you know, and I'd think, Jesus, this is going to be shite. You know, this is going to be boring. And I'd never met the person before in my life, you know, so angry, you know. And I'd be looking at people and thinking, like, I could fucking do him, like a back of that fucker. You know, these are complete strangers that, you know, I'd never seen before in my life, or they'd never done anything wrong with me either. But anyway, I just sat in there and then kept going. I kept going because I know where else to go. Like, and I just kept going. And slowly but surely, like again, like, you know, the body sort of settled down a bit. And then this friend of ours, tube driver Jim, said to me one day, he said, hey, I heard you got the job. No. And I go, oh, yeah, I got it, yeah. And he said, that's great, isn't it? He said, because you're putting on a bit of weight again, you know. And I looked at him like I thought he was trying to be funny. And then he says, and you got a bit of colour, you know. And I looked at him for ages, and I was sitting there in the meeting, like thinking, what's he talking about? And then I realised it just dropped, like a penny dropped, I'm actually getting well. You know, I hadn't thought about that. And it was a wonderful feeling to come over, you know. It's all right. You're going to be all right, you know. So I kept going. I just kept going, you know. And, it was hard, you know what I mean? But I just kept going because I'd really run out of ideas, you know. After a while, like, I got great advice from all the really good people in the fellowship that I know, you know. And Sean was a great help to me. Like, he started taking me around meetings a lot, and feeding me as well, you know. And I was able to get myself organized, you know, a bit more, and everything started to work out all right, you know. And since then, now I haven't had a drink since that day, and I've been back. I was back 25 years last December, you know. And I'm very, 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 very lucky that I've got back. I know that. I don't make any bones about that at all. That's why I'm so grateful today, because I know a lot of friends of ours have gone out again and they've ended up in the box, you know. And but I didn't, you know. I got back and I got well again, you know. And that's great, you know what I mean? And I'm so grateful, like, for everything today. I didn't realize it when first time around when I was drinking, I'd made myself homeless a good few times. I'd been sleeping a good few weeks on tires in an underground car park, you know, and I'd forgotten about all these things. And I'd slept on a lot of sofas and around all different people's houses and pissed on them as well, like, you know. But really and truly, I'd never had anything, do you know what I mean? Never had anything. I used to have my total possessions were in a carrier bag, you know. Everything I had was in the carrier bag. And there's plenty of room in there for more, I promise you, you know. And now I look around, like, and the great things have settled down, and the gratitude is huge with me today, and has stayed with me lovely, you know, in a lovely way. You know, and I think back, like, to that. I always think back to that carrier bag and the possessions, and I look around the cutlery and plates and all the cooking utensils and all the fridges and coopers and everything that I have today. The furniture and the big double bed. I've got a right big size double bed in there just in case I get any visitors. But anyway, that's another story. And you know, all the things I have, lovely clothes and everything else to wear, you know what I mean? Everything's going great. And I just have to go through them things and think about it. You know, I'm getting out of a nice clean bed every morning, you know, and I'm not frightened, you know. I'm able to face the breakfast immediately if I want to, you know. I have a cup of tea, like, and then I'm making my mind what I'm going to eat, you know. I take my tablets, and I'm able to have a shave and a shower, you know, and I'm putting on nice clean clothes, you know. Oh, fantastic, you know. And I feel good. I feel good. That's great. And I don't need to take anything to feel better. You know what I mean? I'm happy the way I am, you know. I love this sobriety. I love being retired as well, like, you know. It's great now. I wake up in the morning, I don't have to do football. But I do what I want to do. Do you know what I mean? That's a great thing, isn't it? You know, go anywhere I like. You know, I've got freedom pass there. I go anywhere I like and do anything I like. You know, I've got great freedom. And I have great friends. And most of my friends tend to be AA members, you know. And that's good, like, because we have something in common. I've never had a sponsor, you know what I mean? I've had a friend take me through the steps and in the very early days, and I don't go through anything like that anymore. Do you know what I mean? I don't bother around like that. I don't bother with sponsorship. Like sponsorship started off in America. You know, it wasn't meant to be the way it is today. It was people were sponsoring people to get them a job. You know, people like that. Like if you had a few bob, and I had a police record, you'd put down a deposit for me to get a job, like. Whatever it be, $500 or something like that, you'd pay and you'd lose that money, or you'd guarantee that money rather, and you'd lose it. And if I'd done something wrong, and that was the sponsorship. That's how it started. But of course, it's got out of hand now. It's got ranks and everything now. Like, you know what I mean? And it's ridiculous. The main thing I have is friends in AA. And if I've got problems, I'll ring my friends. And I'll talk to them and see what they think about it. You know what I mean? And I get the advice I need. You know, and they don't tell me what to do. They tell me what they would do if they're in that position. And that's the best way. And then I can read into that and see how I think about it, you know. And that works very, very well for me, you know. And I think like, if having a sponsor works better for you, then you get one, you know. That's all, by all means. I'm not telling you what to do. I'm telling you what I do, you know. And if a sponsor starts telling you what to do, then the fuck off. Get rid of them, you know. A sponsor should be a friend. Should be somebody that's trying to help you, not run your life, you know. Try and help you out and see that everything's okay for you, you know. And that's the way it was, like, you know. And that, you know, things work out fine. But it's all about, it goes back to what I said at the very start about not picking up the word drink. That's all you really have to do. The rest of all is really superfluous to that, you know. You don't pick up that first drink and get to your meetings, keep in touch with fellow members, you know, and try and do something decent every day. You know, and you'll be fine. Everything will work out fine. I don't need a religion to do that. I know that doing the right thing makes me feel a lot better. You know, putting money into food banks or helping out people you see on the street with a few bob. You know, it's all good. It's character building for me. You know what I mean? I don't want to do anything wrong on anybody. You know, I'm just so happy to be alive and free. You know, and I've never been in trouble with the police since I stopped drinking. You know what I mean? That says it all, doesn't it? Like, you know. So no, I'm just very, very grateful. I love the fellowship. I love the people in the fellowship, you know, and all they've done for me. And I'm very grateful to them, and I'm very grateful to be sitting here tonight sober, you know. So I'll leave it at that. Thank you very much.